You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom, first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX webradio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Tuesday edition. There was an article that I read, and it's been the talk of talk radio. Rush Limbaugh highlighted it. And the author is someone that I've always been impressed with. I always read his material. Now, I can't say that anymore for the National Review, because many of the National Review are big government conservatives. I'm very much a classical liberal, believe in limited government, and as far as I'm concerned, both political parties today, both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, are no longer limited government parties. They never were. They never were libertarian or classical liberal, or for that matter, conservative, and many of the people that write for National Review are big government conservatives. Nothing wrong with that. You're entitled to your political philosophy, but I used to subscribe to it many, many years ago, but sort of the light was lifted from my eyes when it was clear that after communism was more or less defeated and the fall of the Soviet Union in 1989, they still were for big government. It's like you need an enemy. You need a crisis. You need an enemy. And today, that's Islam. Not that Islam is not a danger, folks, or the Islamist, the radical Islamic terrorist. I don't minimize that at all. I've spent more hours and more reading of books and articles on it than I frankly ever would want, just to try to come to grips with what is going on there. So I see them as a threat, and some would even say a bigger threat than the communists, but I don't think so, folks, because the Soviet Union had nuclear weapons, and we were in a Cold War for 50 years, over 50 years. Well, it depends how you want to count, at least 45. So I'm not a regular reader of the National Review, but I am a regular reader of almost anything that Victor Davis Hanson put out, and I'm giving a shout out here, a plug. I urge you to go read the article in its entirety. Now, I'm going to give you my own views on this subject, because they somewhat parallel Victor Davis Hanson, but I have a difference, how should I say, perspective is probably the best. Now, I don't disagree in his analysis of what's happening with the left and the Democratic Party. They're very much marginalizing themselves. I agree they're very much a coastal party and a municipal or city party. And I'm originally from New York, but I also did graduate work, was in Berkeley, not quite 5 years. So I know what I speak of, and even though it's dated, I believe I understand where these people are coming from. And what's happened is the Democratic Party, many years ago, really with McGovern, some would even say before that, and I could make a case for it too, the Democratic Party has moved further and further and further to the left. And when they did that, they somewhat, actually big time, lost their way. They wanted and still betray themselves. They're the party of the people, in the sense that we're for the little guy, the working man, the blue-collar worker, but that's no longer the case. And I'll explain a little bit more a little bit later what I'm talking about. But that is where they made their strategy, and their strategy is, how can we be a one-party nation where the one party is the Democratic Party? Now, I would say we have a one-party nation that has two wings. It has the left wing, namely the Democratic Party, and the right wing, which is the Republican Party, and it's flying in the direction, a collectivist direction, and the wrong way, with the wrong strategies and the wrong approach that's got us in the mess. And that's why both the left in this country, for sure, as well as many people on the so-called right that are really big government progressives, are against Trump. The Never Trumpers. Both parties are big government parties. You need to get that through your head. Now, they have differences. No one, you know, there are always differences. There are people have different points of view, different perspectives, different experiences. But they were taking this country, as far as I'm concerned, down the road to serfdom, where everyone would be dependent very much on the government. And it's all about power and control, where the political elites control you. And it's really, that's true, but that's the surface impression. Really, both parties today are controlled by the people that own the country. And that's largely, think of it as Wall Street, but it's really the investment in commercial banks, as well as your large corporations, in particular, your defense contractors, your Fortune 500 companies. And what's happened is we have open borders, and that's what the Wall Street Journal has been, and its propaganda has been saying for years. And with NAFTA and other trade agreements, what they've done is given the green light, and this happened over 20 years ago under Clinton, for U.S. corporations to move abroad into Mexico, China, really dozens of countries, and it's a big problem for U.S. labor and the American worker, is the American worker, even at minimum wage, he's competing against people that make a tenth or less of what minimum wage workers earn. So what's happened, and Trump has nailed it on the head, the corporations have moved. And this is not new. I mean, this has been going on, again, since Clinton. And that's why in town after town, industry and industry, manufacturing has moved. And they can bring back their goods without paying any tax or tariff. Now, you need to understand, just so you don't misunderstand me, I'm a trained economist. I've been indoctrinated. Anyone that goes to school, and I would say for the last 50s, 60s, 70s, on really even today, the doctrine, the orthodoxy is free trade. And I'm a free trader. And I'm not going to give an economics lecture, but it gets in your head, that's the way to go. And the elites in this country, Democrat and Republican, that is now the orthodoxy. It can't be challenged. Trump is challenging it. Why? In theory, I'm still a free trader. But in practice, what goes on? And the way Trump phrased it is, it's not fair trade. It's not. Governments cheat. And the easiest way to cheat, the fastest way to cheat, is to devalue your currency. Now, there are a lot of other ways. I'm just focusing on this for a minute. Because when you devalue your currency, that gives an even bigger edge where plants are located in foreign governments, because the cost of the goods in terms of U.S. currency goes down. And I hope I'm not trying to lose you, but when a foreign government interferes in the market, and they are interfering, manipulates its currency to make sure it's of less value, think of it as printing money, creating money. People from other countries that want to buy goods have to pay less for them. So it becomes impossible for U.S. manufacturers, where they're competing with other producers of similar, if not identical, items, to compete with them. We have lost industry after industry after industry. I'm old enough to remember when we had companies that produced televisions in the United States. Not anymore. Zenith, Motorola, and others, gone. And you can literally go through a list of industries that are no longer in the United States. Now, I'm emphasizing this because who paid the price here? Who really paid the price? It's the American worker. Whether it's union or non-union, blue collar, white collar, it's the American worker that's paying the price. Now, I'll quickly add, and I'll show my free trade bias, if you will. We get goods from around the world cheap, so consumers benefit. The big beneficiary is consumers. people that have good-paying jobs that can buy these goods, as long as they'll accept their money. You know, Friedman used to always make the case, if they're willing to accept our dollar bills and we get all these goods, well, what are they going to do with the dollar bills? They got to do something with them. But what's happening? Because government spending's out of control, I mean massively out of control, and unfunded liabilities, mainly for Social Security, Medicare, are skyrocketing. Many governments that at one time wanted the dollar, and they still do, but there is a day of reckoning, are having second thoughts. How long can the United States pursue an economic policy that truly is unsustainable? You can't keep doing what we're doing. So the elites, the owner-donor class, the people that own the corporations, founded the corporations, own the corporations, manage the corporations, they're for the status quo as of today. But they're not stupid. If Donald Trump is successful, where would you want your plants? It's not in Mexico or along the U.S.-Mexican border or in China or abroad. It's not that they're not going to resist them. They'll initially, how should I say this, play along with Trump to see how far he gets. But they've already made long-term, really semi-permanent decisions to keep their factories abroad. Why should they bring them back? And that's what I'll try to address, if not in this program, later. Because you can bring them back. The question is, do you bring them back using carrots or incentives? Or do you bring them back using sticks? Think of it as taxes or tariffs. And it gets back to the fundamental difference. You don't need to be a financial genius. You don't need an MBA to understand that if you have to pay your labor minimum wage, whatever that is, and I'm against minimum wages, by the way. I believe individuals should have the right to freely contract with anyone at any price. It's a voluntary exchange. And what I really believe is you don't want a minimum wage. You want a maximum wage where you get paid what you're worth. The government has no business interfering in the labor market, and that's what they do. Keep in mind, though, only a small percentage of the people that are working get the minimum wage. But it is new entrants, and it is primarily teenagers and people in their 20s. I know people will always say, well, I know somebody that's 55 that's working in McDonald's. Well, there's a story there that's not being told. So we have today what's going on. Is Big Lie Media, and for those that are new to the show, those are your major television networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, and your major city papers, New York City, New York Times, Washington, D.C., Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, and a few other papers. They are in a panic mode. Because no one expected Trump to win. Now, I did, but I'm the exception that proves the rule. The overwhelming majority of people in both parties, especially in the establishment and the leadership, never thought that Donald Trump had a chance. First of all, they thought he was a clown. And then suddenly, within 3 or 4 weeks, he was leading in the polls. They never thought he would get the nomination. He got the nomination, and he never thought he would win. I never underestimated him because he made the key issue. Actually made several, but the reason he's president today is he knew that there was untapped. The American people, the American worker were not mad, outraged at both political parties. And where that issue was most could and should be attacked is illegal immigration. You see, the American people are not against immigration. I'm not against immigration. Poll after poll of the American people over time, doesn't matter what political party, what political philosophy you are, even what class, the majority of American people favor immigration. Now, they'll quickly add, if you ask them, they want limited, controlled immigration. The historical average up to 1990, and that's in other words, going almost 200 years, is 250,000 a year. That's an average. Some years it was a lot higher, some years it was a lot lower. And most Americans would say that's reasonable. I would say that when we have high unemployment, let's say over 8%, that's the maximum number we should allow in, period. And that's legal. I'm talking legal here. However, if the economy is truly booming, the labor markets are tight, in other words, unemployment measured by U3 is under 3%, then you could let in more. My maximum number is 500,000. Now, after telling you this, that's just my opinion. But I've talked to a lot of people, and most Americans are for immigration. And while the number will differ, it's usually a couple of hundred thousand. The max usually is a million. Somewhere between zero, and there are people that want to go to zero, and I understand why. And it's because we're not enforcing immigration law. And because of that, millions have let in, not only coming across the U.S.-Mexican border, but flying into the United States on a visa, whether it's a tourist visa, student visa, business visa. There are a whole bunch of visas. But the key thing is you agree to go home. At some point, and it's usually a period of time, it expires. You're supposed to go home. And if you don't go home, you're subject to removal and to deportation, and you're not coming back, most likely, for about 10 years. So people come over here on visas, and they like it here, and they stay here. And they're committing crimes, felonies, and they work here. So it's not just Mexico. The point is, it's the sheer numbers. And Donald Trump understood this, because the American people, the American worker, understands all these people that are here, whether legally or illegally, no matter how they got here, they're competing directly with American citizens. Born, raised, educated here, their parents were as well. It does not sit well with the American people that tens of millions of people have flooded into this country. And see, that is what the elites wanted. It wasn't an accident. I remember talking to someone vividly in a parking lot here one evening, and he was in the construction industry many years ago, and he said, you know, George Bush came into the office, and it's like someone flipped a switch, and suddenly, and my employer said, I'm going to have to let you go, and he said, well, I take less money. He says, no, you won't want to work here for the money I'm going to pay all these illegal aliens. So we had two things happening. Under Clinton and NAFTA and other trade agreements, workers in the manufacturing industry were laid off in millions. And many of these factories, you can load up the factory in one or two trailer trucks, the equipment you need, and relocate and build a factory in Mexico, or put it in an airplane and take it over to China, or any other country for that matter. And that's what they were doing, because they could bring it back, even with the transportation cost, no tariff. So what do businesses do? Rational businesses. Many did exactly that. You know, they went to the Harvard Business School or Stanford Business School. They have smart MBAs, but you don't need an MBA to figure this out. If your labor cost is one-tenth or less, and even if it were half, U.S. workers can't compete against that. And when you compound that with little or no regulation, no child labor laws, how can U.S.-based companies compete? You need a competitive advantage. Basic economics here. Countries have economic advantages. So the combination of U.S. corporations moving their manufacturing plants, facilities abroad, and it's not just Mexico, and Mexico has to compete with other countries that are cheaper than even Mexico. Mexico is relatively expensive compared to many of the other countries, and that's what's going on. So the so-called elite screwed their workers, exploited. I'll use a Marxist phrase. Karl Marx. They exploited their workers. You better believe they did. It was a rational response when the laws were changed. And the laws were changed. It's our own representatives, senators, representatives in the House that did this to the American people. Eventually, the American people were waking up. They would go into work where they've been working 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years. And over the loudspeaker, ladies and gentlemen, our company has decided to lay all you off because we're moving our plant to fill in the blank. So this will be your last day. Thank you very much. Have a good career. And that was probably a nice way to say it. And it happened in industry after industry. Now, the American consumer benefited. Cheap sneakers I have at home. I don't like to wear sneakers, but when it rains, it's muddy, I will. And I have 6 pair because I've worn one or two of the pair out. I think I paid $10, $12 for it. Sneakers used to be real expensive. And we used to have a shoe industry, a leather industry, a textile industry. They're gone. Bye. So two things happen. U.S. corporations moved abroad because of the way Congress changed the laws. And now, so they have to compete with workers abroad earning a fraction of what they do. And now, to add insult to injury, Obama, as well as George Bush, threw open the doors. It's open borders. That's the new, the Wall Street Journal. Now, they're just catering to who? The executives. And I used to be a regular reader of it. Not anymore. Again, who got hurt? Not the executives. Not the top management. Not the stockholders. They made out immensely. Who got hurt were American workers that now have to compete with illegal aliens. What we're seeing here is a big divide and also a big disconnect. You see, those in the elite, whether they're executives, professionals, lawyers, doctors, dentists, journalists, oh, they've been hurt too, by the way. And as far as I'm concerned, good, because they're largely responsible by putting out propaganda. We have the American people supporting a republic and wants the invasion stopped and rolled back. But we have an elite that wants open borders. Who has the money? The donor owner class. And who do they give the money to? Yes, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And now Trump comes along and says he's going to build a wall. Oh, I remember for a year, oh, we're going to build a wall. We're going to put in funds. They never completed it. It's a joke. What is a wall is largely a joke. Yes, in certain cities, they have a decent fence. But for most of the 1,952 or 54 miles, roughly a 2,000 long border, people every day, including today, walk right across. The American people are demanding. They're not suggesting that the laws of this land be enforced and start with immigration. Now, what is media doing? They're going nuts. Why is the Democratic Party going nuts? Why is the lying lunatic left going nuts? Why is big lie media going nuts? And they're scared, folks. They're scared. And they should be scared because the American people are mad. And I mean mad, 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 and they're not putting up with the BS of the media or the Democratic Party. You see, the Democratic Party's strategy reflects the donor-owner classes, people that own the country, the wealthy, and I mean wealthy, multimillionaires, billionaires. What they were going to do is turn it into a one-party system where the party would be the Democratic Party. Because they were going to give citizenship to all the illegal aliens that are here. And in essence, the policy is if you can get to the United States, you can become a citizen and a registered Democrat and we'll have one-party rule in the United States. That was the plan. Donald Trump is messing with the plan. The plan, the plan. What's going to happen to the plan? The American people want it stopped. And it starts with enforcing the law, both at the border, at the airports, and in the country. And it starts, yes, with criminal illegal aliens, now the one that have the records of murder, assault, rape, child abuse, you can go on. The point is, no one wants them here. Even the elites don't want them here. There's not much disagreement on that. But they're all criminal illegal aliens. They've all broke the law many times. And this is messing up the plan. The plan, the plan. They're supposed to get citizenship. They're supposed to be registered Democrats. And then we're in power forever. And no one, and I mean no one, is going to win after all the illegal aliens have citizenship. That's the plan. And the people are saying, take your plan and put it where the sun never sets. We want to change the plan by enforcing the law. You got it? And that's why they're hysterical. They're hysterical. And that's why they're lying. They've always lied. Because if they told the American people what they're about, oh, we're going to make you unemployed, we're going to reduce your wages, and we're going to make you compete with 30, 40, 50 million illegal aliens, plus all the cheap labor abroad, that's the plan. What do you think the American people would say? Take your plan and put it where the sun never sets. The American people are in rebellion. They're revolting. Donald Trump is a revolutionary president. The question is, can he deliver the goods? Will he deliver the goods? That's why he's making a lot of noise. Let me rephrase that. He's making clear that you understand what he's accomplished in the first 30 days. He's accomplished a lot, but what he hasn't accomplished. There are 4,000 positions in the federal government, of which over 600, I think it's 640, I could be a little off here, require Senate approval, advice and consent approval. He's a long way from filling all those positions. Now, give him time, but it's in his interest to fill as many of those positions as quickly as he can. Because what's going on here is the elites are trying to delegitimize, you're going to hear a lot of that word again, Donald Trump. They're trying in some way, somehow, by lying, saying he's crazy, you already heard that, he's Hitler, the Russians are the reason he won, that's garbage. Let me give some free advice. I normally don't do this. I'll tell you why the lying lunatic left and their buddies in big lie media are losing. American people will listen and listen. But if they catch you, it's not hard, but if they catch you lying to them, especially several times, what do most people do? And this is human nature. They don't want to hear you anymore. They shut you down. They don't trust you. They don't want to talk to you. They don't want to do business with you. Your history doesn't matter whether you're on television, radio, news, or a political party or a political candidate. Now, we have a phrase in Texas, burn me once, shame on you. Burn me twice, shame on me. There are always going to be, in any industry, rotten apples, the crooks, the bad guys. It's usually not much, 10, 15%. The people you don't want to do business with. The shady operators. The people that lie. And word gets around, and people avoid them. Now, you're always going to have people like coming into a community that don't know that. But eventually, people wise up. And see, that's what's happening both to both political parties here, both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. You see, the American worker is learning that the Democratic Party, together with their buddies, big lie media, don't care about the American worker at all. They've been screwing the American worker with NAFTA and opening the borders. We have forgotten about the workers, especially those in manufacturing, that used to be great paying jobs. Many of those jobs are gone, and quoting President Obama, they're not coming back. He got that message fairly early. I can remember at one time he was sounding like a little bit like Donald Trump, a protectionist. Then suddenly someone clued him in. You need to understand our plan here, fella. We're moving our plants abroad and we're letting illegal aliens, criminal illegal aliens in, whether it's over the U.S.-Mexican border or through people that overstay their visa. And we even have encouraging that, and we want to increase legal immigration, which is not 250,000 to 500,000, which most Americans would agree with, but 1 million, and it's been 1 million, actually slightly more than 1 million since 1990, over 25 years. Many Americans, and I'm included, including myself in here, we don't want to increase it to 2 or 3 million per year legal green cards, permanent legal residence cards. We want it cut back, and there are some senators that and in the House that want to do it, but you need to understand something. Both parties are corrupt. Both parties, they take the money from the donor-owner class, and then they retire and take even more money. It's corrupt. Both parties have been corrupted to the core. They no longer truly represent you and me. Now, they'll say they do, but talk is cheap. It's what they really do in terms of their actions. We've been betrayed. We've been sold out. They have betrayed their own oath of office. It's follow the money, follow the power. It's all about power and money and staying in office. And the Democrats are losing, losing, losing all over the country. Because the American workers have said, these guys have sold us out. The problem the American worker has today, the American people have today, so has the Republican Party. They don't have clean hands. This has happened under both President George W. Bush as well as President Obama. And that's the point I make. Until there's a third party, nothing fundamentally is going to change. Now, I want to connect it to the Hansen article. And what I'm going to do, I'm looking at the time, I probably spent more time on this than I want, but you need to understand why are the media going nuts, hysterical about Trump? He's doing his job. That's the point. If he were anyone else, he were Democrat, they weren't doing this when Obama came in. They're going crazy. That's the only way to say it. They are going crazy. Now, I want to, if you read the Hansen article, he calls it, I believe he calls it 7 days. 7 days in February.
Yes.
7 days in February. Now, that immediately caught my attention because I knew what he, before I even read it, I knew what he was talking about. You have to be a lot older. You have to be Donald Trump's age, let's put it that way, or thereabouts. There was a popular book as well as popular movie in the early 60s called 7 Days in May. And it's about a military coup to take over the United States government from the President of the United States, who proposed a nuclear disarmament treaty with the Soviet Union. It's a good movie. It starred Burt Lancaster as the general trying to take over this republic. Now, I don't think we're anywhere near 7 days in May, and I don't think it's the military that are trying to take it over, but I think there are political operatives, partisans of the previous administration, and I'll even go further than that. I think administrations in the intelligence community, and by that mainly the Central Intelligence Agency and the National Security Agency, that are opposing Donald Trump and that are leaking, committing crimes, leaking documents to undermine the presidency. And to a certain extent, they've been successful. They got Michael Flynn. And I won't get on that other than I think Mr. Trump at some future date needs to, I think, Trump and Pence and the White House staff, they mishandled Michael Flynn. I know they quickly fired him, and usually that is the good thing to do, but I think the standard that they're holding him to is impossible. No one can remember the details of telephone conversations days, weeks ago. Nobody can, especially if you make a lot of them, and Mike Flynn did. And they walked right into it. It was a setup. Intelligence community, the so-called deep state. Deep state means a state within a state. And in some countries like Turkey and Egypt, you do have a state within a state. We have, I won't say we've never had a state within a state because I really believe we have, but it's not that well known. So I recommend the book and recommend the movie, 7 Days in May. It's somewhat dated, but what I really wanted to do, I'm not going to play the clip from the movie. I want to play a speech that President John F. Kennedy gave. Some have labeled it the secret society speech. Now, I'm not going to play the entire 20 minutes. It's a little over 19 minutes, but I'm going to play an excerpt. And for those that are new listeners to the show, you can listen to the Prompt Pop Show by going to my companion blog, and that's promptpops.wordpress.com. And if you go there under my photograph, you'll see links to the most recent shows, and this is show 843. But I want to play just briefly. Actually, I think you should listen to the entire 19 minutes if you have time. And that's the second full version. But I want to play his speech. And it's directed at the press. And what's the problem today? We had a press conference last week, a rather unique press conference, when President Trump was critical of the press. Now, he has a different style. Everyone has a different style. Keep in mind, this is a speech that President Kennedy gave, and listen to it.
Ladies and gentlemen, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. for we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed. No president should fear public scrutiny of his program, for from that scrutiny comes understanding, and from that understanding comes support or opposition, and both are necessary. I am not asking your newspapers to support an administration, but I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people. For I have complete confidence in the response and dedication of our citizens whenever they are fully informed. I not only could not stifle controversy among your readers, I welcome it. This administration intends to be candid about its errors. For as a wise man once said, an error doesn't become a mistake until you refuse to correct it. We intend to accept full responsibility for our errors, and we expect you to point them out when we miss them. Without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed, and no republic can survive. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. And that is why our press was protected by the First Amendment, the only business in America specifically protected by the Constitution, not primarily to amuse and entertain, not to emphasize the trivial and the sentimental, not to simply give the public what it wants, but to inform, to arouse, to reflect, to state our dangers and our opportunities, to indicate our crises and our choices, to lead, mold, educate, and sometimes even anger public opinion. This means greater coverage and analysis of international news, for it is no longer far away and foreign, but close at hand and local. It means greater attention to improved understanding of the news, as well as improved transmission. And it means, finally, that government at all levels must meet its obligation to provide you with the fullest possible information outside the narrowest limits of national security. And so it is to the printing press, to the recorder of man's deeds, the keeper of his conscience, the courier of his news, that we look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
That was President John F. Kennedy, a speech to the press that I think was really appropriate right now, because Donald Trump was not eloquent because it was a press conference. He needs to give a similar speech, though, and I would recommend him doing it, because the press, I call big lie media, they're unhinged, and they're using that phrase on Trump, but they are unhinged. Donald Trump has no problem with criticism, and that's what he said in his press conference. He knows he's going to make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. And yes, the press, the media should point out the mistakes, so he'll correct them, get different points of view. But what he truly was complaining about is not critical reports or commentary, but the spreading of out-and-out lies and the use of leaked documents that never should have been leaked. Now, the press will use leaked documents. There's a long history of that. What I found a little bit ironic about the speech, President Kennedy was killed about 2 years later, assassinated, and not too many years later, the United States was heavily involved in a war in Vietnam. An interesting book is The Best and Brightest by David Haberstrand, the late author. I recommend it to you. But what you'll find in the book is lying. The military at the highest levels was lying to the president. Now, the people at the company level and below knew what was going on. And what happened is, and I'm not doing justice, we escalated. We put more and more and more troops there. The problem, our strategy was wrong. And we were defeated by not the North Vietnamese, the communists, but people in the United States, our own Congress. Now, I would never have gotten involved in Vietnam, given the way we tried to afford it. And eventually, even LBJ, President Johnson, it forced him to conclude he could not get a second term. He lost the trust of the people, and the people largely trusted him. But you see, lies, not telling the truth, not facing the facts, fake news, is corrosive. It hurts people, both those involved and innocent people. By not discussing issues that should be discussed, and now we're not doing it. We're talking about style rather than substance. We're not talking about the issues. We're more interested in delegitimizing a president than supporting him. We can't accept that the Democratic Party lost, and the media was largely wrong about it. They should change their ways, but they're not going to. They understand that Donald Trump doesn't fear them, but their biggest fear is that Donald Trump will be successful. And that is truly what they're afraid of and are trembling about. If Donald Trump, through his economic policies, results such as a significant tax cut, there are other things he needs to do, including a forced immigration law. But if he's successful, he succeeds and we have a booming economy where the unemployment rate is under 3% and we're growing at 4, 5, or 6%. In other words, above the historical trend line of roughly 3-3.5%. They know that this will seriously damage the credibility of not only big lie media, but also the Democratic Party, as well as the elites. They have been shown up for what they have been, incompetent, and hurting their own people, their base. You see, the American people are slow, but they eventually catch on. They're leaving the Democratic Party, and yes, they're leaving the Republican Party. Donald Trump was, in many respects, a shot in the dark. Let's give Mr. Trump a chance. If he delivers, we'll give him a second term. If he delivers again, we'll give Mike Pence two terms. But if they betray us, like the Democratic Party has done, as the Republican Party keeps doing, then they'll wipe their hands of them and move to a third viable, successful party. Remember, we've had a long history of two-party governments, but over time they've moved further and further to the left. Many respects, it's hard to tell the difference. What is the difference between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party? Note, I didn't give you an example of a candidate from each, and that's part of the problem of the parties. They have become a vehicle, really, of a man and a white horse. In some respects, that's what Trump is. If you can get someone with the right message, momentum, and organization and money behind him, you can almost get anyone elected. Now, that's a big if. And Trump didn't have it all. He was lacking in organization, and that's where the Republican Party, the Republican National Committee, in some respects, pushed him over the finish line. Because they could target or determine through various models who are the people most likely to vote for him and make sure those people were called and they got out the vote. It was very much targeted in certain states, certain congressional districts, and the so-called blue wall was broken. Pennsylvania wasn't expected to be won by the Republicans. Similar for Wisconsin, Ohio, and a few other states. What you're seeing here is the crack up of both political parties. The most noticeable is the Democratic Party. But don't forget, in 2006, the people gave the Democratic Party a chance, and they blew it. Actually, they gave them a second chance, and they blew it again. The patience of the American people is growing shorter and shorter. The elites are not an elite. They're an interest, a class, that are doing what's best for them, but not best for the country, nor for the vast majority of the American people. Oh, yes, The upper class, the top 1%, have done very, very well, thank you very much, whether on an income basis or a wealth basis. But it is the middle class, as well as the lower classes, including blue-collar, white-collar, factory, as well as service industries, that have either lost their jobs or seen their pay eroded and eroded and eroded, and the American dream become a very distant memory. They are looking to Donald Trump to take us in a new direction and to restore that American dream. They don't trust either political party. They don't trust what used to be called the press, the television networks, the newspapers, big lie media, because they know they've been lied to. And that's why their effectiveness is not what it used to be. They've lost their monopoly. Monopolists don't like it when they lose their monopoly. And the people in it are panicking because they, like the American worker in the factories, might be losing their jobs. They didn't deliver the victory for the Democratic Party, for Hillary Clinton. Not that she deserved it. She was by far the most corrupt, incompetent, worst candidate that the Democratic Party ever had. And they deserve what they got. The Russians had nothing to do with this. They did it to themselves. Hillary Clinton did it to themselves, as did the Democratic Party. They didn't have to nominate her for president, but they did. And in so doing, they betrayed the American worker. There's still going to be a day of reckoning. We have not dodged that bullet. We need to go in a radically different direction, which means eliminating the income tax as well as payroll taxes for Social Security and Medicare, and replace all of those taxes with a single tax, a broad-based consumption tax, such as the fare tax. That's what needs to be done. Do I think it's going to be done? I'm having my doubts. I'm having serious doubts. We'll see. We probably have to wait 60, 90 days before we see what President Trump is proposing in regarding fundamental reform of the tax system. I'm not optimistic. That's why I'm not a Republican or Democrat anymore. I've given up on both parties. And that's the majority view right now. I'm not a minority anymore. We're heading towards 50%. Our problem, the American people's problem, is we don't have a party to vote for. We don't have candidates for that party across the country. We're stuck with the bought and paid for, corrupted political parties, both Democrat and Republican. So while the media, big lie media, is in denial, and really, or it looks like a nervous breakdown, folks, and you can see that they really think they're hot stuff. No, they're not. They're propagandists. They're liars. Trump told it. Right, whether they agree with it or not, the American people don't believe you anymore. It's not hard to understand. I've understood it for several years, actually longer. And once that point is reached, click, they don't listen. That's why viewership has gone down, down, and down. That's why you've seen paper after paper after paper closing their doors. Now, I'll be first to say, the internet is where most people today go for the news, but they specifically target what they're interested in. In other words, this highly concentrated, and it is still highly concentrated, it's got more concentrated. There are, in essence, six media companies that control media in this country. At least they think. But are people buying the newspapers? Are they watching the newscast? No. I'll tell you where they go. They go to talk radio. But more importantly, they target specific articles, specific videos. They put in keywords. Now, to a large extent, that can also be manipulated. It's hard, but it is. Governments fear it. China, they control the internet. And watch out, if the wrong people get in power, they're going to clamp down on your ability to reach videos, articles, anything that's critical of the party in power. So if the big lie media wants to continue with this false narrative of the reason Hillary lost, the reason the Democratic Party lost, the reason our polls were so wrong was that the Russians were hacking, That is truly grasping at straws. No one believes that. The Russians determined the outcome of this election? Are you crazy? Where'd you get that nutty idea? Well, I'll tell you where they got it. The Democratic Party and the Hillary Clinton, part of it. They had to explain their loss. It wasn't supposed to happen. Today, it should have been President Hillary Clinton. They can't believe it. They can't believe calling people racist, deplorables, irredeemables. They can't believe that once you do that, the people you call that, guess what? They're not going to vote for you. Is it hard to understand? I don't think so. See, they're in deep denial. And the reason why they're panicking now, they know deep down, they won't admit it, but they know deep down, if President Trump has the right policies, economic policies primarily, but also law enforcement policies and foreign policies, takes us in very much a different direction. Those policies most likely will succeed. And if they succeed, instead of the Democratic Party being the single dominant party for the next 50 to 100 years, and that was the game plan, their party shrinks in size because they're going to be rejected by the American people. Now, that doesn't mean the Republican Party automatically is the winner here, because a lot of the leadership in the Republican Party, you can't tell them apart from the Democrats. They're for open borders. Get a clue. The American people are not for open borders. They're not for the continuing invasion of this country day in, day out by illegal aliens. Enough is enough. Please go home. And guess what? That is starting to happen. I've said this for many years. If a president would enforce the law, go after the employers, eventually the illegal aliens figure it out. They're not slow. They figure it out. I can't get a job. I can't get my children educated. I can't get welfare. I can't get medical treatment. I think I better go home. They don't want me here. Gee, they got the message. And they're going home all by themselves. The smart ones are. The criminals, they'll tough it out until they get arrested and thrown in prison and eventually deported. But it's rather late. This should have been happening when the Republicans took power under George W. Bush, but he was just as bad as Obama in the immigration era. He lives in Dallas, not popular with many former Republicans. You see, that's the problem. The Republican Party has become a big government party, and they were doing the bidding of the donor-owner class. Open borders was and is today, or has been up to today, the policy of the government. Wink, wink, nod, nod. Oh, we'll give a little enforcement here, a little enforcement there. But if you can get into the country and get to a sanctuary city, you got it made. Well, Donald Trump is trying to put a stop to that. He's focusing first on criminal illegal aliens. What I think he understands is the problem is so big because it's gone on for so long. We're not talking 10 million people. We're talking 30 to 60 million. Who knows the number? It's going to take years to change the direction this economy is going. It starts with enforcing existing immigration law. We don't need new comprehensive immigration reform. We need to enforce the laws that are in the books. We need to scrap our tax system, replace it with a consumption tax, such as the fair tax, or my version of it, the fair tax less. We need fair trade. I, as much as I'm a free trader, Donald Trump is right. We have been the suckers. We've been taken advantage of. Forget about the economic textbooks for a minute. Other countries are not playing by the rules. They're cheating. And the easiest way to cheat is manipulation of the currency to make another country, whether it's Mexico or China, exports cheaper. And that makes it virtually impossible for U.S. companies to compete. I'm for competition. I'm against monopoly. I'm for competition. And that's worldwide competition. The American worker does have to compete, and he can compete, but not if he's being stabbed in the back by his own representative and senators, so it's impossible. If you give incentives for U.S. businesses, U.S.-based businesses to go abroad, they're going to take advantage of it. Why are we subsidizing the exports of other countries? Why are we giving foreign aid to countries? You see, I'm against subsidies. For our citizens, our corporations, I certainly don't want to subsidize other businesses abroad that compete with U.S. companies. You see, there is a move afoot, and it's been going on for really since the end of World War II, to take us to a one-world government under socialism. That is the big plan. One-world government, one-worlders under socialism. Socialism, wherever it's tried, has failed. It can't deliver the goods. And the American people are not going to give their freedom, liberties away for a one-world government. Look at the failures of socialism. Look at the terrible, corrupt record of the United Nations. That is what the elites in both parties, Democrat and Republican, now they call it by different names, the New World Order. It's not new, and it's not very orderly, and we're the joke. We're the ones that are laughed at abroad, because other countries are not playing the game. They're doing what's best for China, what's best for Japan, what's best for Mexico. It's about time that, to use President Trump's phrase, put America first. Buy American, hire American. That is not the party line of either the Democratic Party or, for that matter, the Republican Party. The dirty little secret, they want us to move to a one-world government under socialism. And we've been being sold out by the so-called elites. They don't get hurt. Their wealth and income has dramatically increased, while the wealth and income of the vast majority of the American people has declined, and in some cases, significantly. Yes, you still can move up the social class structure with effort, persistence. So for many people, the American dream is still viable. But for many, many more, it's no longer. But the one group that's truly benefited are the 1%. Actually, it's the 0.5%. You can go to the IRS publishes information in terms of taxes and incomes. And there have been studies. But keep in mind, those are aggregate numbers. There is mobility. It's not the same people is what I'm trying to say. Except that for the upper classes, the ones that are, and that's not a big group. Most of that money is inherited. It's usually several generations ago that they've inherited, or it's that you marry into it. What the upper classes, the so-called elite, the owner donors have done, has made it near impossible for the American people to realize their American dreams. That's not right. And that's why you're seeing a disconnect between Washington and the American people, largely in the middle of the country. It also spills over in terms of foreign policy. And to stop Trump, they will use subversive means, I think despicable means. And I hope they're caught. I hope they're prosecuted. But keep in mind, this is a planned, organized effort to overthrow the legitimately elected president by a few radical, lying, lunatic leftists, sore losers. And to get a little more perspective on this, because I am running out of time, I urge you to read that article in National Review by Victor Davis Hanson. He gives you his take, which is similar to mine. You're being lied to, you're being misled, you're being betrayed, and they're trying to panic you. But the good news is the American people, the Trump supporters, even the non-Trump supporters, are not buying it this time. Let them go nuts. Let them rant and rave. Let them become unhinged. No one's listening anymore. They don't believe them anymore. What they're trying to do is earn a living, maybe buy a home, and through hard work and effort, make sure that their children have a higher standard of living than they have had and got from their parents. And that is becoming increasingly harder and harder because of the policies of both the Democratic Party and Republican Party. Thank you for listening, and now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.